just too. All right, that's too. It's just
it
too
just
much.
Feels too. It feels too tiny for me.
Okay, now even I'm starting to feel a little bad.
Just a little though.
Ladies and gentlemen. He is your president, prophet, seer, and revelator. He's Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
And we're live from CBS, where they employ real people.
This is true. And we were just talking about this during the break. Actually, there are more live DJs employed here than any other broadcasting company in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
We are right next to a station right here, a couple, which is live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It's a showcase of stars.
It absolutely is,
my friend. But it may snow where you are. The snow level will drop to 200 feet tonight. That means many of us will see 1 to 2 inches, or if you're in the suburbs, like Scotty, you'll see 3 inches.
I'm sorry?
God, you're so juvenile.
Well, this is a children's program. No. And if you don't see snow, you'll see ice.
Oh.
That was a cruel little laugh.
Would you like to see my little midget and my two big bouncers? Ah, fantastic. All right.
Well, at least Mrs. JLC 3 inches.
Zing. I have nowhere to go with that. It's perfect. It's flawless as it is. I don't want to tamper with it.
We have to follow up and find out what's happening with baby Packy Rose. We spoke with her yesterday.
Fantastic.
The baby left in the picnic basket on the doorstep of the nursing home. Now she's doing just fine.
Was she really left in a picnic basket?
No, some type of basket. It must have been for a picnic.
It always, in swaddling clothes.
Mm-hmm. Multnomah County Court has granted the state custody of Packy Rose, found outside the nursing home over the weekend. Let's see here. She's doing fine, says the State Department of Health, a cruel caseworker. This lady named Hughes, who's in charge of the baby.
I'm Hughes!
Also weighed in on what to call the baby, who is now referred to as Delta Doe in court papers.
What
Delta
do you
want
to do? Delta...
Delta Doe?
Yes, no. You wanted to grow up to be a fat, chain-smoking white woman?
Mm-hmm.
Delta Doe.
Doe.
What do you Doe?
Doe.
Doe.
Well, Hughes is suggesting Hope Rose, a name conferred by workers of the Rose City Nursing Home where the baby was left on the doorstep.
What does this mean, Scotty? Scotty is typing on the screen, Delta Doe, what's that horn you have on?
That's an old Tanya Tucker song.
Is it?
Yes.
I'm impressed.
Delta
Dawn. It's a song by Helen Reddy, he claims.
Helen Reddy also did it, yes.
I'm impressed that he's quoting it's Helen Reddy. I'm impressed with that. Okay. Delta Doe. Delta Doe is a terrible name, by the way. Delta's a fat girl's name. And you know that that's true. Because the only Delta you can think of is Delta Burke. And so
that is true.
That's a category killer. She's the only Delta
she's
you
not
can think
fat
of.
Anymore.
Really? Are you sure? You want to stake
not
a claim
really
on that?
Sure.
I was gonna. We should do like a fat or not thing, like a dead or not thing. Don't get me wrong. She's. I do her. I think Delta Burke is hot. I really do. In kind of a slatternly kind of way. She is a woman of girth, though. She's a person of size. Delta Doe is a stupid name. Her real name is Packy Rose. That's like a whole. I know my name is Steven kind of a thing. I know my name is Packy Rose. We should deliver like a thing that she has to wear.
Okay, this is an abandoned child, Rick.
No, but we're giving the child love. We're giving the touch of human warmth and kindness. Mm. We should get a really nice child's piece of clothing, but then make sure that it says Packy Rose, like that it's in like a bejeweled sort of spangly letters on the front. Packy Rose. Packy. It's funny. All right, I'm going to send some flowers to Packy Rose today.
I'll just buy you a bedazzler. You can do it yourself.
All right, it's Tim Riley. Packy Rose. Don't come knock on your door unless you're telling Suzanne Severs to evacuate. Her house burned down last night. And that fast-moving brush fire in Malibu also. Susan Anton's house was destroyed. Both houses were in this 20-acre blaze. The homes in the Malibu area typically sell for between $5 and $15 million. The L.A. Times reports at least 4 homes were destroyed, several others damaged. Actress Victoria Principal was forced to hose down her own house with water.
which ultimately was not damaged. The cause of the blaze still being investigated.
Victoria Principal, really?
Yep.
Who even knew she was still alive?
Other celebrities who live nearby include Barbara Streisand, Mel Gibson, Ted Dancing, and Pierce Brosnan. L.A. County Fire Inspector Rick Dominguez says the blaze spread quickly, thanks in part to large, strong Santa Ana winds.
Upstairs, my computer up?
It broke out at about 5 o'clock with heavy winds, you know, 45, 55 mile an hour winds, aggressive winds, and drew the fire down here to the bluffs on these homes as quick as you could imagine.
It's always terrible when celebrities' homes are destroyed.
Jim Roop will be on with us later on, by the way. He'll be talking about, what are you talking about, the video iPhone, the iPod, we talk about that, and also this the burning and the hey, and the where's my house. Victoria Principal. Those houses, you said there was like $10 million up there.
5 to 15.
That's pretty impressive, actually. When is the last time Victoria Principal was on anything that anybody watched by, like, intentionally?
Well, if you have a house in that rate, you really don't have to leave to do anything.
I guess that's true. It's amazing that she can still afford to live there. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's talk about this big speech that's going on tomorrow from the president. White House spokesman Tony Snow says the American people need to remember how Iraq can be a threat to us.
It is worth reminding the American people of what the stakes are and how they do fit into the larger war on terror.
Yes, Mr. Snow says Democrats have to answer a few questions for themselves on how to best proceed in Iraq.
Democrats are going to have to make a choice here, and they're going to have to decide where they stand in terms of two issues. Number one, do you want Iraq to succeed? And if so, what does that mean?
Care.
And number two, believe in supporting the troops, as you say, and how do you express that support?
Iraq can't succeed. They can't succeed at any. They're broke. They can't succeed at making a waffle if they put the whole country's effort behind it. They can't do it. Nothing works there. They've got cheap gas, but no cars. They've got roads, but nowhere to go to. They've got the guns, but everybody has guns. You can't do anything with it. There's nothing you can accomplish in that country. There is nothing to succeed at. There is no goal. There is no prize. There is no gold in the pot at the end of this. There is no brass ring. Nothing can happen there.
No. Oregon's own Senator Gordon Smith said the fight in Baghdad has mutated into civil war that has nothing to do with the U.S.
The conflict is not just us against Al-Qaeda or us against Baathists. It's Sunnis versus Shias. It's a civil war. It's a sectarian strife that, frankly, isn't our fight and isn't our fault and not something we can fix.
Dogs and cats living together. And he's a Republican.
Yes, he's a Republican. Senator Smith says the U.S. needs to shift its military strategy to battle terrorists in Iraq.
We need to fight it on our terms in pursuing our interests.
No,
obviously, the way Iraq has mutated, playing the street cop doesn't work.
No, we just need to leave. Let's just all, you know what it is? This whole Iraq thing, I got it right here. This is going to be my proposal. I should just send this to the Onion Radio News Desk guys, and they can make this next week's weekly radio address in George W. Bush. I'm going to suggest that we just solve this whole thing the way that they solved, Patrick Duffy's character's death on Dallas. We're all just going to wake up tomorrow, and we're going to pretend it was a dream. That's totally how they should do it. This is fantastic. This is gold. They should do George W. Bush's press conference, and then the press conference just starts with a long tracking shot of the camera going down a hallway inside the residence at the White House. And then it circles around a corner, and then it goes up some stairs, and then it goes through a series of gold-plated, jeweled-handled doors. And then it goes into George Bush showering, and then he turns around, and he opens the shower door, and he says, well, hello, I didn't see you come in. And then he reveals the last 3 years have just been a dream. That's fantastic. There you go. And then we all agree. Like, if George Bush just came on television right now,
yes,
and he just said, instead, the last 3.5 years have all been a dream, and we're just going to move forward, and none of it was real, and we are going to pretend that the whole thing... I would totally be on board with that right now. I'd be willing to let bygones be bygones, let the past be the past, and to move forward if we could just pretend that it was all some sort of weird hallucination, and then we just move forward as though none of it actually happened. There you go. Fantastic. There you go. That's your plan. That's your way forward.
This is George Bush's Vietnam, says Senator Ted Kennedy. B.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were...
Yes, we're there already.
We were loading B.
In Vietnam, the White House grew increasingly obsessed with victory and increasingly divorced from the will of the people and any rational policy.
Well, that's beginning to sound like Black Mole.
I was going the whole, the only thing we have to fear. I was going that way where he's, like, his voice is coming off a wax cylinder.
Now, this troop surge is a result of wishful flaw thinking.
Such an escalation would be a policy of desperation built on denial and fantasy. It is stay the course under another name.
Rick, this email says, in Iraq, you say they have nothing, but I saw a piece on CNN about the proliferation of cell phones in Iraq. How can Iraqis afford to buy cell phones, and who put up the money for the cell phone infrastructure?
Well, they have to coordinate attacks.
And
it's the only thing that ever works there.
And Mary Kay parties. Yeah, that's a good. That really is a good question. Somebody told me. Well, never mind. Here's Tim Riley.
We need to be pulling out of Iraq sooner rather than later.
What we have at the present time is a civil war, and most of the generals that are there that have testified before the committee think that the American presence is actually enhancing the civil war at the present time.
Why, that's crazy.
This war has gone on for too long.
I think we have an obligation to protect American troops. We have suffered. We have lost more than 3,000 American troops. American troops have done everything they've been asked to do. They have been there 4 years. This is longer than World War II.
Yeah. Now, we didn't talk about this the other day because it was just too much to get to. We didn't have time. But did we all see that story the other day about... God, it's so... It's not even really grimly amusing. It's just awful. That story the other day about the military asking dead soldiers to reenlist.
Did
you see that?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about... It's beyond my words to even describe it. And I forget how many it was, because the 3,000 troops that have been killed so far, and 10 times that, probably wounded or whatever. But there was I don't think they clarified exactly how many people received the letters. But there were these families, and this is not like a crazy talk. This is in the Washington Post. There's an actual story where the press and the military, the Pentagon, had to put out some official apology for it. Whereas all of these families who had their poor kids go off to Iraq and come home in body bags got these letters last week saying, "Dear proud servicemen, we would like you to reenlist for another tour of Iraq." And I mean, it's like that thing on CNN of calling Barack Obama, calling him Osama. It's just one of those mistakes that you wonder how it can possibly happen, since there's so many dozens of layers of bureaucracy that have got to be involved. By the way, don't think I didn't notice that Lisa Goddard didn't, probably because...
And they're picking on that poor gal.
She was in there, seriously, and they're spending their time being cruel to our dear friend Lisa Goddard. She was in sort of a black mood the last couple of days, but I don't think I did not notice that she didn't respond to that story about my attempt to push her into a comment about that CNN referring to Osama as Obama. By the way, do we all know what Barack Obama's middle name is?
Yes.
You do? Do you know, Sarah?
I do not know.
What do you suppose? And again, I don't dislike him. I don't really know anything about him. And I'm not going
to
be one of those.
You don't have to, because the media's building him up.
That's the thing.
He doesn't have to say a thing. He doesn't have to state his opinion on anything. Someone has decided that he's a contender.
That's what I'm talking about. I appreciate the fact that in America, I don't really need to exercise my brain much at all. The media sort of function as training wheels, making it impossible to fall over. You know,
he's the new Howard Dean.
No matter what you do, you can't. I mean, I wobble, but my brain doesn't fall down because the media just makes it so I don't really have to think about anything at all, really. And so I don't really need to know what Barack Obama stands for, how he votes, what his history is, where he's from, what he does, what he doesn't do. It doesn't matter. The media's just said, no, he's a likely contender for 08, and I come on the show every day and I repeat it. No, Barack Obama, he's the man to beat in 08. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I have no idea. I have no reason
for
that statement.
Where does it stand on the issue? Doesn't matter. People don't know.
Doesn't matter. I don't know. No one knows. It's just the best thing. And when I say best, I mean divisive and horrifying. What is the worst possible middle name you could have if you were let's just say, if you were a non-white person? Running for president, or presumably running for president, in 2007
aside
in America. Aside from Hitler.
Yeah, I was just thinking Adolf.
Aside from Hitler. Barack, Hitler, Obama.
It really isn't Osama. Is it Laden?
I'm trying to think if there's anywhere to go from Stalin.
I just threw it out there, hoping you would.
Raper. let us name him Rapier. Let us name him Anal Rapist. No, his middle name is Hussein.
Oh.
And which is a thing that, it's one of those things, this is how the media works now, thanks largely to FARC. I blame all of this on FARC. Is that we are now in this point in American culture where, when you go to bed on Monday, none of us know something. And then by the end of Tuesday, we all know it. And so that's one of those things that nobody knew, but now everybody will know it within like a day. Because like Sean Hannity, I know, now... Now, out of respect, he says, refers to him constantly by his full name. Barack Hussein Obama. And he's always saying Barack Hussein Obama, which is fantastic. So there you go. Barack Obama's middle name is Hussein, and that is great. That really is great. And by great, I mean full of material for us here at the Rick Emerson Program. Let's do one more, and then we'll break.
All right. Well, now that the Democrats are back in power, we're just going to have to get used to Kennedy speaking every day, regardless of what they do. Excellent. Here's Rhode Island Congressman Patrick Kennedy. I guess he went to rehab.
Oh, is he the I got to get to the Hill and vote.
Yeah, and he cracked into a telephone pole or something in the middle of the night. He says throwing more troops into harm's way is not the answer.
And until the president acknowledges that there is a political solution that needs to be done as well as a military solution, he just doesn't get it.
I will continue to pop my peas.
Where's the accent?
I don't know.
He's not a real Kennedy.
Can they? Can East Coast people drop that at will?
No, it takes some practice.
Really?
You talk to your relatives on the phone. He comes back.
It's true. It's like when I go back to Kennewick and I come back and I just talk like a hick. And I, you know what's weird? Have you ever done this? You ever talk to somebody that you don't think has an accent, and then they'll forget, or they'll get tired, or drunk, or they're calling you from back home, and suddenly the accent is there again, and it kind of freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
You know who can turn the accent on and off as it suits her is Oprah. You talk to Oprah. Whenever Oprah is talking to anybody poor, whenever she's trying to talk, like, is it talk to the working people? Whenever she's trying to talk to the working man, Oprah suddenly, because I think she's from South Carolina. Is that where she's from? Carolina. Oprah totally switches on the accent. And suddenly she starts dropping her G's. Like Hillary, that whole the working man.
Yeah.
Boy, has anything ever sounded so stiff and unnatural? The working man. But you know who's got a really thick southern accent that he learned to turn off, but who can turn it back on is Stephen Colbert.
Oh.
How weird. It's strange. Because he's from, like, the deep south. He's from, like, Georgia or something. And the reason he talks the way he does is because he said he realized that southern people were treated as dumb because of the accent, and so he learned to talk by practicing, by imitating Walter Cronkite, I think, is who it was. And that's why he has that great, John, I'm standing in front of the White House. He has that great delivery, but he can totally switch the southern accent back on, which is just bizarre. It screws with your head. We should, but you're right, Patrick Kennedy has no,
And until the president acknowledges
he's not a real
that
Kennedy,
there is a...
No, he's
you
not.
Won't be taken seriously. We won't play any more sound bites until that accent comes back. But because the Kennedy without the accent.
We demand the return of the accent.
Doesn't matter what they had to say, really.
How great that he doesn't have the accent. He does have the pill abuse and the not able to control his car late at night around Washington. We should break here. We'll come back. Tim Riley returns to the Ministry of Truth. What the hell else are we doing? Jim Roop will be here to talk about the blah, 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 the Apple and the iPhone and the hey. Dennis Pitzenmarger later on. Top five bands who are not Kiss who have been overlooked by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay there. Back after this is the Rick Emerson Show. Because it's usually not, like, it's...
Well, I mean, it's fine for a guy, but I have a lot of crap in my purse.
Oh, that's true. You carry a bunch of, like, pointy, sticky things in your purse. Sticky, I'm...
What is
I meant things that stick, like,
Sticky notes.
No, I meant, like, knitting needles. Not sticky.
I do have
my... Your purse is full of sticky goo. What the hell is that?
It's some, like, 7-in-1 tool that my mom gave me.
That is handy.
It's a light I can blind rapists with.
It's a girl's best friend. Mom, what do you do when you're not feeling so fresh? I have this unique 7-in-1 tool.
Oh.
I already fixed an earring with it.
All right.
I don't like you.
With superior ball-launching action. Sarah Dillon, does that phrase bring back memories?
No.
Superior ball-launching action.
Did it?
Don't remember? Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, now that those liberals are back in charge of things, a bipartisan group of federal legislators is pushing for funding of those crazy little stem cell research things. Erland Specter says people should take to the streets in Washington to get the attention of President Bush on this issue, like he's got a penny.
There ought to be a million-person march organized on the Mall.
It makes me
famous for million-purpose marches. None more purposeful than this.
Okay, can we raise some money to have the fat sucked out of his jowls before he's allowed to speak anywhere?
He must use that new chew that we were talking about yesterday.
Ever since I got these new school bandits,
I didn't even make it halfway through that. Let's try this again. Is it Arlen Specter?
Yes.
Boy, speaking to people, I swear to God, I thought he was in a box.
There ought to be a million-person march organized on the Mall. Famous for million-purpose marches. None more purposeful than this. It could be heard of the living quarters of the White House.
Oh, it's that sound of when he has to, like, reload, and he kind of... between phrases. Oh, that's revolting. God damn. All right.
Meanwhile, Senator Richard Hatch of Utah says he's frustrated about the government's handcuffing of stem cell research.
We shouldn't have to lose our scientists. And we've lost some great scientists who've gone overseas because they can't do their work here as well as they could over there.
Brigham Young had 54 wives. Here's Tim Riley.
Apple has introduced a new mobile phone with a touch screen that combines features with the iPod musical player. Apple Chief Executive Steve Jobs said the device will be called, imagine this, the iPhone.
These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
Boy, you know, the thing about Steve Jobs is you do get the feeling that he could... I mean, if you know anything about that guy and you follow his career, which I kind of do, he could just stand up in front of that Macworld Expo every year and just be like, "And I order you to rise and kill in my name. You shall bathe in the entrails of your enemies and bring me their heads." And they'd be like, "All right, fine." He'd just be up there in his black turtleneck and his wire-rimmed spectacles looking all stylish. And "I shall order you to kill the firstborn child in every household." And they'd be like, "Well, Steve Jobs said we have to kill the... Sorry." But they would do... But here's the thing. Is like when the Apple Death Corps, when they came to... When the Apple soldiers came to your house to kill you, they would do it while being impeccably dressed. And then, like, they would write some sort of death note on the wall in your blood, but they would do it in a really stylish, like, old antiquated font that was perfectly spaced and that had absolutely, like, stunning serifs on the edge. Because that's what that guy's all about, man. And I don't own a Macintosh. I don't think I own anything from Apple except the actual iTunes player. But I got to tell you, man, you talk about a guy who, as Robert Cringely said, just single-handedly has reinvented the computer industry. Or single-handedly taken credit for reinventing the computer industry with the inventions made by people underneath him over and over again. I mean, more style, more charisma. He has more charisma in bits of dried skin that fall off the palms of his hands than Bill Gates has in his entire body and ever will.
Steve Jobs says this iPhone is very, very smart.
You don't need a stylus. It's far more accurate than any touch display that's ever been shipped. It ignores unintended touches. It's super smart. You can do multi-finger gestures on it. And boy, have we patented it.
So, multi-finger gesture. I mean, I talked about this a little bit last week that I'm so resistant in many ways to getting an iPod, but here's the thing is I recognize that I'm resistant for no reason. I recognize this about myself, that I am resistant to the iPod simply to be contrary. I know that, and I'm not denying it, and I try not to just be contrary just for the sake of its own, because I hate people that are like that. But I do. This is one area of my life where I am that way. I resist getting an iPod for no good goddamned reason at all.
It's gonna stop.
And here's the thing. Because it is not a plug, but I have a Zen from Creative Labs, the same thing.
What
that
the heck is that?
It's a thing that's not an iPod, which is why it doesn't matter in the grand scheme. Same thing Sarah has. Now, to their credit, they did create more or less the MP3 player, but it doesn't matter anymore because it's not an iPod. And really, there is an iPod, and then there's everything else, and I'm aware of that fact. The great thing about it is that... do you remember that time that Natalie Portman said she knew what it was like to be black? She's like, now, you know, sometimes I know what it's like to be black. And then, like, the next day, it was a whole lot of, like, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know what it's like. I don't know what it's like to be black, but I do know what it's like to be a Mac user sometimes. Because Mac users, you know, whatever, they're like a really fashionably, stylishly dressed 6% of the population. And you go to the store, though, and everything is just for the Windows people. Yeah. Everything is just for the PC, and the Mac people are like, but what about us? We have needs. I just want to be loved and have good software.
That's why I never go out.
I just...
might be disappointed. You know what's out there. You get your Mac, stay home.
I just want to play Flight Simulator. Is that so wrong? But you can't. That's what it's like to not have an iPod. Laura and I will go to the store together. We'll go to Fry's. We'll go to whatever. And she's got her iPod, which I got for her because I'm a caring individual. And because it was free. And then I've got my Creative Labs, you know, my jukebox. And we'll go there, and there's just nothing for me. They don't sell anything. They don't sell any accessories. They don't sell any products. They don't sell... I have to send away to the company and pay, like, $80 for a cord every time I... Every time a cable or something for my jukebox goes missing or I break it or something, I have to send it. It takes them 8 weeks to send it to me in the mail. They send it via Pony Express. You walk to 7-Eleven, and there's three aisles of stuff for the iPod. I mean... So it is like a given that I will eventually fold. I will buckle like a belt, I will accede, and I will get an iPod. Because I got to tell you, like all Macintosh products, like all Apple products, you pick up an iPod, and it's like, this is, I know this sounds like a big commercial for the iPod, but it is worth noting. You get like a, that stupid Zune, that thing, the Microsoft thing. You get that or any sort of Microsoft product, and there's a booklet and a CD-ROM and like a quick start guide and like a warranty kit, and there's like a 55-page documentation thing. You get the iPod, there's no instruction, but there's nothing. There's like one instruction, press here to turn on. You do that, it's good. And within 5 seconds, really, you could have the brain, you could have a brain the size of a kidney bean, and in like 5 seconds, you'll know how to work an iPod. Same thing with Macintosh. I remember... In the early days of home computers, doing, like all radio station personnel, staying late at night at like 1 in the morning and secretly sneaking in to do my resume late at night because it was, you know, I didn't own my own computer at that time. I couldn't afford it. But I was always afraid I was about to be fired because I always was. So I would sneak into the radio station late at night and do my air check and my resume when nobody was around and take advantage of the office copier and so forth, doing it on the Macintosh. And I remember, man, in like 5 seconds, I learned how to operate a Macintosh. No worries, no trouble, no fuss, no muss. So I will eventually break down. I'll get an iPod, and I will be one of the bland, mindless, faceless horde. I'm fully aware of that fact. I will be assimilated. I'm sorry, and we're done.
Well, let's talk about Barbara Walters and Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, fantastic.
Donald Trump.
Bam.
Well, the tension between Barbara Walters and Rosie O'Donnell boiled over yesterday morning when the portly comic called Walters, quote, a bleeping liar. The fight began around 8:30 a.m., and Walters, back from a two-week vacation, walked into the hair and makeup room at ABC Studios and tried to hug O'Donnell, if you can visualize that.
Wait, I can't.
Nope. Well, according to spies, O'Donnell recoiled from Walters' touch and yelled, "You keep me in the newspapers this whole time." Both View producer Bill Getty and Walters tried to calm O'Donnell. Walters told her, quote, "I did everything I could to squash the story," unquote, prompting Rosie to scream, "You didn't call me for 10 goddamn days." This is Rosie, not me. This is a quote.
Is this me when the station went off the air last night?
Yeah. Yeah. And you didn't tell me what you were going to say on television. O'Donnell is fuming because Trump went on Larry King, of course, 2 weeks ago. And you know the whole story. When Walters tried to defend herself, O'Donnell erupted. "Are you looking me in the face and denying you didn't tell me that you didn't say this? What? You're a bleeping liar."
Read that sentence again.
Rosie erupted. "Are you looking me in the face and denying you didn't tell him that you didn't say this? You're a bleeping liar."
All right.
Candy Berger, a representative for both Walters and O'Donnell, said,
name.
"Whatever happened in the hair and makeup room is hardly a squabble. It's business as usual. Everyone has moved on."
You know, here's the thing about it. I wouldn't screw with Rosie O'Donnell if I was a small, at least not in person, like a frail bird-like woman like Barbara Walters. You get the feeling that Rosie O'Donnell could throw a good punch that would go all the way through Barbara Walters' face and out the back of her head.
And I think Barbara Walters wears a rubber mask that makes her look like she did in the 70s, like a Mrs. Doubtfire type of thing.
Totally.
Yes, totally.
wearing a mask made of her own. She was probably saving her skin throughout the 70s, like the ant in the Ant and the Grasshopper story. And then later on, the grasshopper looked his own age, whereas the ant looked as though it was from 1977, because the ant had very craftily and cunningly put aside its own skin cells and stitched a new face out of its own skin. Kids, that's the lesson from today's story. Save your own skin and make a mask out of it.
Well, we're not done with this story yet.
Oh, okay.
Because Donald Trump has written a letter to Rosie O'Donnell, and apparently Entertainment Tonight got a hold of it, which means I did too. It reads, "Dear Rosie, I hope you had a wonderful vacation with your wife. You needed the rest. An article in today's New York Post indicates that you blew up at Barbara Walters for being, quote, a liar, unquote. Actually, I don't blame you, but in fact, she lied to both of us. After your maniacal and foolish rant against me 2 weeks ago, Barbara called me from her vacation," I did not call her, "in order to apologize for your behavior. She had heard that I was going to retaliate against you and try to talk me out of it. She very much wanted me to go on the show as soon as she got back so that she could patch things up. I said no. To be exact, she said that working with her is like living in hell. And most pointedly, Donald, never get into the mud with pigs. And don't worry, she won't be here for long. Barbara knows exactly what she told me over the phone, and she has to live with it. Perhaps that's why her initial statement was so mild. In another incident, when I saw her eating at Le Cirque about 2 months ago and asked how Rosie was doing, she sarcastically rolled her eyes and said, 'Donald, you have to ruin my meal,' unquote. In any event, you have good reason to be angry. Please give my warmest regards to Kelly. Sincerely, Donald J. Trump. P.S. I was surprised that you let your spat with Barbara get into the newspapers, but I have always said that, as you have proven with Rosie the magazine, you are very self-destructive. You must work on this for your own good."
I don't even know how this... So, is this going to end with Rosie leaving The View, or is this going to end...
Well, I think she's going to leave anyway because she has other interests to pursue.
Does she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's had other offers.
What are those other offers? What would Rosie O'Donnell have offers to do?
Some other type of television show.
You know what I could see Rosie O'Donnell doing? I could see Rosie O'Donnell working on a cruise ship. I could see... No, seriously, I mean this now. I could,
as the director?
Yes. I could see Rosie O'Donnell... No. I could see Rosie O'Donnell having a standing gig on a cruise ship.
Well, she has the cruises for lesbian parents.
That's what I'm saying. It's that thing where she gets paid. It's like, you know what it is? It'd be like that Celine Dion deal in Vegas, but it's on a cruise line. She gets paid. She works like, I don't know, 4 or 3 months out of the year, something like that. She gets paid a big-ass flat fee. And all she does, she has to just come out, she tells a few jokes, she sings a song, she does a hey-hey, she does like a 20-minute reprise of her daytime talk show thing, she interviews people. This is brilliant. She pulls people, like passengers, because it's at dinner, she's on stage, they're eating, she pulls a few of them up on stage, she does a little faux talk show interview with them, bam, she cashes the check, goes back to her cabin, drinks until she passes out. Rinse, repeat. There you go, 2-3 months out of the year, and then she puts the check in the bank for that. It's brilliant. If she's not doing that already, she ought to be. Hey, by the way, I just want to read this. This is from USA Today. This is from the purple section. I always love this. It really does, it shows you that we really have only risen above the level of Neanderthal man, or Adam and Eve, if you're Scotty. Just a little bit here.
In that book.
In that book that I don't really understand. Oh, I created a theme song for the Suburban Perspective.
Oh.
So we should do that later. Maybe next hour we'll do Suburban Perspective with Scotty J. Maybe we'll take it now that the phones are working.
Oh, has anyone called today?
No, because we told them we told them early on, we're like, don't call, there's no point.
Oh.
So, we'll have the audience direct the Suburban Perspective section later. Anyway, but have we ever seen that TV commercial where it's like the guy is like, there's the toenail, and then there's the demons that live underneath the toenail or whatever? And we've got this thing in this country for depicting either good or bad germs as like little round creatures with big spiky teeth. And on the front of today's USA Today, the headline... First of all, it's an unpleasant headline. Stomach flu rips through the nation. And then there's a picture of a big colon. And then in the colon are just some clam-looking things with huge teeth.
That looks like that hamburger Clyde made.
Clyde's hamburger looks like a big colon. Oh, you mean the teeth?
Yeah.
So inside the picture of the colon are these huge cookie monster looking things with big spiky teeth.
Is that a colon pictured?
I believe it is. But this is apparently that let me just tell you, this is what you don't want to have, because this is what I had that week that put me out sick. Stomach viruses tearing through communities from California. It's like the stomach viruses are going door to door and kicking down the screen door and then rifling through grandma's jewelry. The most likely culprits are noroviruses, blah, 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 blah. They're hard to wipe. Oh, I'm sorry. They're hard. I'm sorry. The
I guess they would be hard to reach where they are. That being the case.
It wasn't really an issue. If you know what I mean. The virus, best known as the cause of cruise ship outbreaks, is easy to catch, hard to wipe out.
Oh, okay. We have a lung brush.
People in the suburbs will be getting 3 inches tonight.
They're getting 3 inches.
Oh, kill me. Oh, God. Anywho, I can't really go anywhere from there. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. No, this is...
I can't remember what this story started out as being.
Anyway, so this is why I wanted to read this, because it all builds to this one great sentence. Last week, San Quentin State Prison, and you know that place is going to smell bad to begin with, closed to new prisoners and visitors after nearly... Picture how... You want to talk about the worst-smelling place on Earth. I mean, San Quentin can't smell all that good on the best of days. It's not like it smells like roses, like, you know, like when everything's fine. After 500 inmates fell ill with uncontrollable vomiting and diarrhea, similar symptoms have been plaguing nursing homes, college, and pro athletes have missed games, blah, blah, blah. 400 people on a Caribbean cruise were stricken. Neurovirus infection nearly clears up after 2 or 3 days, but epidemiologist blah, blah, blah says that the misery of those days shouldn't be dismissed. He says, quote, "You can be vomiting 30 times a day." Oh, man. That's humor right there. Fantastic. You've got a long brush. Oh, God. Ron, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hey, the phones are working. Ron, hello.
Yeah, you were talking about what else would Rosie do.
Yeah.
She has designs on taking over for Bob Barker on The Price is Right.
Now, has she said that?
She has, from what I've heard, she has said that. And I've even heard that they've actually started maybe taking it seriously, which scares the hell out of me.
I don't see her being able to do that. I don't think it'd wash.
I don't see how it would either, but she's always been a major, major Bob Barker fan.
Well, really, I mean, who isn't? But yes?
That was, like I say, that was what I had heard, and I've heard it from a couple of different places, a couple different sources. That's what she wants to do. Now, and that was one of the things why
the whole Barbara thing
was still sort of up in the air, because if she got that, she'd be taken off to go play Price is Right.
Now, when you say you've heard this from sources, what do you mean by that?
TV show, you know, I watch that Entertainment and Extra and those things a lot. I don't remember which one it might have been. Or it might even been one of those type of things online.
Okay. Just checking. So I don't believe that that's going to be the case. Because here's the thing is that I think she was able to pull off looking nice for a while when she did that talk show. But I think everybody at this point is sort of caught on to the fact that she's just a horrible person. And again, it's not like I'm coming down on Donald Trump's side. He seems like an equally bad person. I mean, she's got her fan base. She's got money. She doesn't need my approval. But I think everybody's sort of hip to the fact that she's just kind of a bitch. And I don't know. I think to be the prize, first of all, no one can replace Bob Barker. But if somebody did, it's got to be somebody innocuous. It's got to be like a
Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, that's wrong! Bam! I can't even imagine who could replace Bob Barker. Who will replace Bob Barker is like the who could be the next James Bond discussion. It's going to be one of those things that we're going to bring up like 50 times.
It'll be somebody undeserving like Carrot Top.
Yeah. I was thinking Louis Anderson, actually, but that's because he was on the Family Feud. I know that's exactly why I'm thinking of that. You're right. It'll be somebody like that. It'll be some...
Oh, Tom Bergeron. Tom.
Well, I was going to say, not this guy, because he's too famous, but it'll be like imagine on the celebrity ladder, two or three rungs down, a version of Billy Crystal. That's exactly what it'll be. It won't be Billy Crystal himself. He's a little too famous. But it'll be a and I don't know who, like... I don't know, like a third string Billy Crystal. Thank you for the call, sir. I don't even know who a third string Billy Crystal would even be. I can't even imagine.
There's no farm team or game show host anymore. Well, there's no Mark Goodson, Bill Todman anymore.
I don't even know where they come from. Game show hosts always used to come from the radio. Mm-hmm. But since the advent of Ryan Seacrest, it's just the radio now has become this way just to jump right into like terrible television programs. That are the music oriented or so forth. So I have nothing. Rick, this email says, the greatest remote broadcast ever. Rick, the greatest remote broadcast ever was the time you and Tim were shuffled up to Seattle to do that show in front of Safeco Field.
That's right.
That was the best show ever. That really was the best show ever. When I was in Seattle over Christmas, we actually drove right by that, and I pointed out to Lara exactly the place where you and I had to stand to do that hideous remote. If you ever wanted proof that Intercom just mismanaged... Apparently they were way ahead of us. They were more ambitious than we thought. They were mismanaging like three radio stations at once, and we thought it was just us. We thought it was just our radio station they were handling badly. Little did we know. I mean, it's all come out today. But little did we know that they were busy mishandling numerous brands. Multitasking, one might say. But we were in front of Safeco Field. And, in retrospect, that was some sort of a remote that somebody had already paid for, that they were contractually obligated to. And that's why we were doing that. It didn't occur to me at the time. Because why would you possibly... In the name of Christ, why would you send Tim and I up to broadcast from in front of where the Mariners play? It doesn't make any sense. It makes even less sense now that I think about it.
And we were in Redmond to the ballpark to watch a game after the show.
Yeah, would you like to come in? No. No, we would not. Where's the car? We're leaving. Which way to the highway? That's it. We had no interest in staying to watch the game. And that was another one of the... We're broadcasting. God damn, it was so stupid. Broadcasting, standing at a card table in front of Safeco Field in Seattle... In a city that didn't get the show, and when I say didn't get the show, I don't mean like we did it and they didn't understand our type of humor. I mean the show wasn't broadcast.
People
there.
Were standing in front of a portable radio, shaking them.
Yeah.
Where was this?
That was the best part, is that Tim and I are standing underneath the steel gray Seattle sky behind a card table wearing those stupid Mike Ditka headsets, like we're standing on the side screaming like, no, Red 42, Red, no, shotgun, that whatever, doing the show. And then guys would come by the card table, and Tim is right. They would look at us and watch our mouths moving and listen to what we were saying, and then they would hold little radios up to their ears and start tuning through the stations really slowly.
Shaking their heads.
Waiting for the little voices on the magic box to match the voices of the two, which would never happen because we weren't on in Seattle. The program wasn't even being freaking broadcast there.
We should be.
It made no sense at all, and they made us stay in Renton at a Silver Cloud Inn. I mean, good God almighty. Renton. Really? I mean, look, I don't demand like a 500 thread count or anything, but Renton. It's like one step above staying in SeaTac. At least SeaTac has card rooms. All right. Anyway, you can go drink and gamble with Indians. Because the Indians run those places. That's a fact. And they are all hairdressers. That's a callback. We got come back, we'll talk to these people about Bob Barker. What else? We got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. He'll talk to us about this iPhone thing that's going to...
What about Suzanne Summers' house burning down?
And Suzanne Summers, homeless. So we'll talk about all of that later on. Dennis Pitzenbauger and the top five most unjustly over... I'm not going to hit this post. Damn. Top five most unjustly overlooked Rock and Roll Hall of Fame acts that are not Kiss. You stay there. Here's The Loaf.